So first of all, I would have to say that I feel like I'm the queen of the pivot, if there is such a thing.
Hey, Fran. It's David Nabinsky here in New York City. Don't rock the boat. Don't rock the boat. Have you heard that before? Someone telling you to play it safe and follow traditional paths? So excited for this new Portfolio Career podcast episode with Lucia Liu. As you heard here, Lucia is very familiar with her fair share of pivots. After graduating from Penn, she started working at American Express, from which she has worked in a couple of different paths. She's currently the host of the Rock the Boat podcast, where she interviews many leading Asian American entrepreneurs that have been charting their own path, including presidential candidate Andrew Yang. Lucia and I became friends through a business development community called Fernio. I had the honor of previously interviewing the founder of Fernio, Scott Pollack, on this podcast earlier before. In this episode, you will also learn about startup advisory roles and how to potentially get them. As always, this podcast with timestamp notes is available on my website at portfoliocareerpodcast.com. So excited for you to build and grow your portfolio career. Here we go with Lucia. Well, Lucia, if we were to go to an event tonight, how do you typically introduce yourself?
I say, hi, my name is Lucia. How are you? Mm-hmm. What interests you?
Yeah. Amazing. And there's a lot of things that we want to talk to you about. And one of the main things is around pivoting, mm-hmm. and we'll just get into that in a little bit in more detail. But maybe we could just start off with one thing that I think you're really focused on these days is the Rock the Boat podcast. And to me, it seems like you're focusing on kind of unconventional, non-linear journeys of people. Yep. And I'd just be curious as to why you're interested in that type of work.
Yeah. So first of all, I would have to say that I feel like I'm the queen of the pivot, if there is such a thing. The whole purpose of the podcast that I started called Rock the Boat, initially we started it because my co-host and I both had extremely zigzag career paths. So to give you all some background, my career path started at American Express. I was there for 4 years right after I graduated from undergrad, and I thought my career would just end up at American Express. I thought I would continue down that path for indefinitely until I made either VP or something larger within the company. And it was around when I was on my fourth year at American Express that I realized, you know, I really want to learn some new skills, and I really want to learn something that is very concrete, because at a big company, what happens is you manage a lot of money, you interact with a lot of people, you learn how to get through a lot of red tape within the company, but you don't actually do any of the practical work. So at Amex, as a marketer, you interact with a lot of agencies, and they're the ones who are executing. You essentially manage the money and you tell them, hey, this is what I'm looking for. This is what I do. You write a creative brief, you send it to the agency, and the agency does all of the execution. So I was really curious to do something with my own hands and to build something of my own. I also felt like there was a lot less creativity in the corporate environment. So growing up, I felt like I was a pretty creative person. I loved school projects. I did a lot of dioramas. I participated in drama, and I really liked to sing. I also sketched and I drew, and I felt like in the corporate world, everything was revolved around spreadsheets and decks, which are PowerPoint presentations. And nothing really spoke creatively to me. And so I started thinking about ways to get more into the creative fields, to do things that are a bit more creative. And one of the things that I really enjoyed doing was making chocolates. And I learned how to make chocolates on YouTube. I tried my hand at making different kind of chocolates, and I brought them to American Express holiday parties, and I shopped it around all the VPs, and they really loved it. They loved my chocolates. And so it emboldened me to apply to Smorgasburg. And I entered a contest at Smorgasburg, and they said, okay, well, we're looking for a chocolate vendor. And Smorgasburg at the time, essentially, like, whoever made it into Smorgasburg became really big in the food world. And so it was really interesting to, or it was really exciting that, one, they responded to me, and then two, they said, hey, bring all of your products, come booth on the weekend, and the people who attend Smorgasburg are going to vote. So I remember the night before the event, I had, I think, 15 of my friends over. They were helping me package my chocolates and build signs and do a bunch of things. And I was in the kitchen. I was working till 3 a.m. to make a whole bunch of different chocolates. I made a milk tea flavored chocolate, and I made a chai chocolate. Those were the two chocolates that I made. And I specifically chose those flavors because I wanted them to reflect my heritage. I wanted them to reflect flavors that I have never encountered before in chocolate. And so I took that to Smorgasburg the next day, and we sold out. We sold out of every single thing that I made. And to put it into context, right? So I had my little booth with some fairy lights, a tablecloth, and a handmade sign. You know, meanwhile, the vendors next to me were these big companies. They already had cafes. They had just everything decked out. They had signage, branding, everything. And so for me to sell out of all my products, and for a lot of people to come out, support me, and vote for my chocolates meant a lot. And the next week, Smorgasburg reached back out to me and said, hey, we counted all the votes and you won.
Woo!
And so that was kind of the moment when I thought, oh, wow, this is real. I can create a product. I can sell at Smorgasburg. This is a real big opportunity. And so I started creating a website on Squarespace. This is when Squarespace was still fairly new. I think it was in 2012. And so this was the first time I realized you don't need a lick of code to create a website. Mm-hmm. And so I created my first website, started putting some content together for Lululosophy Chocolates, which is what I named it. And I started selling at Smorgasburg on the weekends. And it got to the point where, you know, I just felt like what I was doing was so much more interesting than my day job that I quit my day job. Of course, my parents are Asian American, and growing up Chinese, they had certain standards of what success looks like. And success to them is, you know, graduate from a good school, stay on a stable career path, get married, have kids, buy a house, and then just live life, right? Mm-hmm. And that's their definition of success. And at that point, I veered off that path. So my mom, I would have conversations with my mom, and she would say, why do you have an Ivy League degree to schlep chocolates around and do manual labor? She was so worried that I was just spending a lot of time producing chocolates. And so she was like, you know, where is this going to go? How are you going to start a real business? Despite all of that, she was actually fairly supportive when I went back to Shanghai. My parents still live in Shanghai. I went back to Shanghai, and she helped me find a box vendor. And that's, you know, from then on, that's the Lululosophy box. My parents actually ended up helping to schlep all the chocolates to DHL, where they shipped it from Shanghai over to New York.
Wow.
Yeah. So despite their grumblings about, you know, this not going anywhere, they were still very supportive of me and their actions. So I did the chocolate business for about 2 years. I ended up landing contracts with the Park Hyatt. I was in their spa. I catered at the Mercedes-Benz Lounge. I catered at American Centurion Lounges. American Express Centurion lounges. And it was a great experience, but I was so young at the time and I didn't really understand how to run a business yet. And I also didn't understand how to grow a business. So even though there were people who approached me who were interested in investing in the chocolate business, I wasn't confident that I could actually take it somewhere. I felt like there were still a lot of skills that I needed to learn. And at the same time, you know, it was wearing on my body because every weekend I would carry, you know, over like 100 pounds of stuff, schlep it over to Smorgasburg for the weekend and table there all day. And then afterwards I would run to my kitchen and produce a lot of chocolates. And so I would pull like 18 hour shifts. And so it was definitely hard on my body. I broke even on the business, but I really struggled with growth and I really struggled with inventory. Also, I was a solo entrepreneur. And at the time, WeWork, co-working spaces, they weren't popular. And so I just had a really hard time figuring out or finding other people who were doing what I was doing. I decided to park Lululosophy Chocolate, so I took a hiatus. I still own the brand today. I'm thinking about bringing it back.
Oh, wow.
In my 40s, maybe, when I move out of the city and the production costs aren't as high, or, you know, when the right opportunity comes. But I kept the brand and I have all my recipes. And I instead decided I would go explore and learn some additional skills, especially, you know, useful for building a business. And a lot of the skills that came to mind were, you know, sales, business development. So I ended up getting a real estate license.
Mm-hmm. Here comes one of the pivots.
Here comes another pivot, right? I didn't even talk about the one at American Express, actually. Back to my real estate license. So I ended up getting a real estate license. And I started kind of, you know, toying around with the idea of renting places. When I was a sophomore in college, I actually worked for a property management firm and I helped them rent all of their rental units in Philly. And so I actually ended up doing a really great job that summer. So I think I rented 3 apartments a week, which was quite a lot for, you know, a sophomore. And it was a good living. It was great. So I just remember that experience. And so I started working with a real estate agency. And at the time, the partner at the real estate agency, she wanted me to help her with the startup idea. But long story short, I ended up only renting one apartment. And I actually ended up consulting for a company called VA Loan Captain, which later on became Home Captain. VA Loan Captain was started by an Amex alum. He's a veteran, and he essentially was trying to help veterans get their VA home loan benefit. And so I started consulting for him, and later on I was brought on as his first employee. And so from him, I learned a lot of business development skills, and I learned a lot of, you know, people management skills. So, you know, when I first got on to VA Loan Captain, I helped him with his operations. I helped him create a lot of pitch decks, and I essentially became his chief of staff. So I would handle everything in the office related to marketing, to human resources. Not that there were that many people in that office, but I would handle like payroll. I would handle a lot of the people type of work, hiring, culture. But then I also went with him to pitch lenders. So we would actually travel across the country and we would pitch different lenders on our products. And so I would help him develop the pitch. We would go together and then I would sit through the pitch or I would present the pitch myself. And so that's how I really got a good taste of business development. And about 2 years into that, into that company, I got fairly ingrained into the real estate world. We were also doing, you know, some mortgage related stuff. So it was fintech related. You know, we presented at Finovate, and we got pretty well known in the fintech space. 2 years into that, this company approached me called Selfmade. They're a digital image editing company, or initially they started out as that. And the CEO reached out to me and said, hey, you know, I'm interested in speaking with you. So I met with the CEO and he said, hey, you know, I think you'd be a great chief of staff. And I was curious about what a Series A startup was like, even though it was like in a completely different industry again. Mm-hmm. It was in tech, it was in social media. I had no idea what that space was like. Mm-hmm. And so I stayed with the company for about a year, and for various reasons, things didn't work out. So I left the company. But while I was there, I learned a lot about tech. I learned a lot about venture funding, and I learned a lot about developing culture and people. And so I did a lot of like the recruiting functions, which was something that I hadn't done before. And then I did another career pivot.
And that's, and, are we at four?
So we had credit cards, travel, chocolate, real estate, fintech, social media, tech. Now podcasting. So there's seven.
Okay.
So we have seven. Yeah. So I was telling David, I was telling you earlier that the way that I fell into podcasting was because when I was working on my chocolate business, I would listen to the Startup Podcast by Gimlet. And I remember I would produce chocolates. I was tapping on my chocolate molds and listening to Alex Bloomberg's voice in my ear. And I just thought that it was incredible to have someone's voice in your ear. You feel so close to them. You feel like you know them. And it also felt like a reality TV show in your ear. Mm-hmm. And I thought this was fascinating. So I approached my friend who at the time, she was previously a journalist and she had written for Business Insider and a couple of the other places. And I approached her and I said, hey, you know, podcasting is really hot right now. I know you and I have both had a very zigzag career path. So for her, you know, she wrote for Business Insider. She was a journalist. Then she pivoted into startups. And then she started working for the government. Then later on, she got a yoga license. Hmm. She got a yoga license or like a yoga certification. I reached out to her and I was like, hey, you know what? Like, I feel like there aren't any Asian American podcasts out there. And I feel like there aren't a lot of podcasts that can help you build a blueprint, especially once you've left the corporate environment or left a very straight or stable career path. And that's how Rock the Boat came about. It actually came about 2 to 3 years ago. Hmm. And we've both been kind of working on it on the side and ideating. It wasn't until this year in January that we finally launched it because we both realized, hey, there's a lot of need for this kind of podcast. And we were also able to lock down some really incredible guests like Andrew Yang, Michelle Phan. And so we launched in January, finally, after, you know, years of kind of changing jobs and like me getting married in the interim and then like her getting a new job. So finally, we were able to come together. We launched the podcast in January. It was really great. Andrew Yang came to our launch. And yeah, now we're on season three.
Yeah, amazing. So as you mentioned, that kind of the relationship that is formed through listeners and you know, when you were making chocolates and listening to the Startup Podcast, what would you say to the person as the queen of the pivot? You know, what would you say to somebody that is thinking about that next pivot, that next step? What is a blueprint that they should be thinking about?
I love this question. One, because I think that you should not do what I did and just jump straight into whatever it is that you want to jump straight into. I think I learned a lot from jumping into these deep, dark waters. You know, going into food without any food background, making chocolates by, you know, looking at YouTube videos, making podcasts by listening to podcasts, you know. I think for somebody who's actually interested in exploring a different career path or exploring something a little different, the best way to do it is to do it on the side as either a hobby or help somebody else do it. So for example, if you're in finance or consulting, you're interested in going into a creative field, or you're interested in like starting a blog or writing something, go and do it on the side. So the best example that I have of this is we actually feature Chris Chung in episode 2 of Rock the Boat. Chris is the co-founder of Box.com, which is this online wholesaler that's a competitor to Costco. And what Chris did was, while he was working at Goldman, he started a Twilight shirt company. So he was selling Twilight shirts online, and he was leveraging Facebook ads to sell more t-shirts. So he was kind of living this double life. But at the point when he realized that the business was getting bigger than his full-time job, that's when he left. And that's the more stable way to do it. Obviously, if you like really hate your full-time job and you feel like it's a detriment to your mental health, then you can leave and then start exploring other options. But if your full-time job is not as demanding and you have that extra time on nights and weekends, then I would really encourage you to do it on nights and weekends.
Another thing that I'm really interested about is you've had some advisory type roles for startups. Maybe walk us through how those types of roles come about. Do they look like full-time or part-time? Just maybe walk me through, like, give a flavor of what kind of a startup advisory role looks like. How does someone get it, you know, and how do they balance that with other kind of projects and work?
Yeah, so as a startup advisor, I think it runs the gamut, right? So some startups have a really formalized advisory process where they will pay you, you know, a certain amount, either in equity or in cash, to advise their company. And the expectation is either to open doors for them or make connections for them or to help them on certain things. So for example, a lot of CFO types, like, so if you're in finance, a lot of startups will look for your expertise on fundraising or financial, I think, strategy. So a lot of those types of advisory roles come up. Other types of advisory roles can be that you're actually a consultant for the company and they're bringing you on to either advise on marketing or advise on different kinds of strategies. And I think that, you know, it really depends on your relationship with the startup. So for me, I'm an advisor to VA Lincoln Captain, and that's because I have a really strong relationship with the CEO, and you know, we kind of ping ideas back and forth, and then sometimes he'll bring me on for certain projects. And so we just maintain an advisory role. So sometimes if you're looking to be a startup advisor, it might be helpful to look into your portfolio, so to speak, and see which companies you've previously worked for and if you can advise on those companies. I think for advisors, really, startups are looking for a couple of things. Either it's their expertise, it's your network, or it's funding. So some advisors are actually angels to the company. So they actually invest in the company and they help in certain ways. I've been approached by a couple of different companies to be an advisor, and usually it's more of an informal relationship, mm-hmm. where, you know, I give them advice, I help them with fundraising, etc. It's something that I just like to do on the side, and it's something that I enjoy helping other companies with, and it doesn't take that much of my time.
Okay. Expertise, network, and fundraising?
And funding.
Funding.
Okay.
What else about pivoting? Lessons learned, advice to people that are, you know, exploring projects, bouncing around for curiosity, skills, portfolio, etc. What other types of ideas and insights do you have for people?
I think sometimes you just need the activation energy. I think that a lot of people will want to explore a pivot or are interested in doing a lot of different things, and they'll talk about it, right? And they'll talk about it, but then nothing happens. And so having that activation energy, one piece of advice that I've heard from other people, it's like a twofold piece of advice. One piece of advice is you can't talk about it until you do it. So it's like, you know, instead of telling everybody like, hey, I'm going to run a marathon, or hey, I'm going to write a blog, or hey, I'm going to start this network, or I'm going to build this product, don't tell anybody about it until you actually do it. Because then you don't give yourself the satisfaction of feeling like you've accomplished something, and people kind of saying or giving you accolades for doing something you haven't done yet.
Yeah.
Right. The flip side, the other advice that I've also heard was tell everybody and put a date to it. And then you'll start feeling real bad if you don't do it. I think that's actually Andrew Yang's advice. He was like, just tell everybody that you're going to do it and invite everybody to a launch. And if you have nothing to show for it at that point in time, then you're going to be hella embarrassed. And so that kind of pushes you and makes you do the thing that you said you're going to do. So I guess there's two ways to look at it. Either don't say anything until you actually accomplish something, or set yourself a date, invite all of your friends and family and everybody you care about to that event, and make sure you get whatever it is that you want to get done by that event. And actually, what happened for Rock the Boat was the latter. We invited everybody to the launch event. We did not have an episode at all yet. We had interviewed a whole bunch of people. We interviewed 20 people, but we had no clue how to edit an episode. We had no clue how to edit audio. My co-host, who's a writer, she could not write for audio. And so we went through 6 or 7 different iterations of episode 1. And we just kind of sat there. I sat there for about like a week and a half just editing until we finally got all the things right for episode 1. And that was in time for our launch.
Wow. Yeah, it's like, what are we celebrating? What's here? It's gonna happen.
Exactly. Yeah. So instead, just put it on the calendar, and it's like, well, now I'm SOL. I've got to make sure that it happens.
Yeah. Now it's 3 seasons, and definitely has evolved, and seems like the content has evolved too. So congrats.
Thank you. Yeah, definitely. I mean, we started out talking about Zigzag Careers, and now season 3 is all about highlighting people who've overcome tremendous challenges. And the goal is to bring in dialogue about issues. So we actually tackle some really difficult and tough issues in season 3. We talk about disability. We talk about incarceration. The one that actually just came out this afternoon is about mental health.
Yeah. Thanks for doing that work. I mean, that's definitely hard conversations to have, and I think a podcast is a great format to do that, to kind of start having those conversations more and more. So thanks for doing that work.
Yeah, that's, thank you.
It's powerful stuff.
Thank you.
Anything else that you think that we should talk about as you kind of think about the portfolio of projects? You know, different things for people in startup space, anything else that you think might be useful for people?
You know, I think there's no silver bullet. I think at the end of the day, it's about what you choose. And I think it's okay to be a generalist. There's a new book called Range. It's like Epstein?
David Epstein, yeah.
David Epstein, right? Yeah. So I think within our society, there's a lot of reverence for people who are experts. You know, I've had bosses tell me, we want experts. We want everybody to be an expert. We want excellence. And the thing is, I think that in today's world, there's a lot more, well, there's a lot of reverence for experts and people who are amazing in their fields. But I think there's a lot more opportunity for us to learn a lot more things because information is just so readily available to us. You know, 20 years ago, I don't think I could have been a chocolatier unless I apprenticed for a chocolatier. I don't think I could have learned how to make chocolates on YouTube, right? Like, there's just so much information out there. So I think that it is okay to go explore. I'm still trying to figure out what it is that I personally need to focus on and personally what I want to dedicate my life to. I haven't quite figured that out yet, but I think with every pivot that I take, I get closer to that. And I think all the skills that I've learned from all these different pivots will bring me closer to whatever it is that I decide to dedicate my life to. And once I've found that thing that I want to dedicate my life to, I feel like I'm going to be a lot better equipped for it. Just because I've experienced so many different things and just because I have tackled so many different things. And I also think that I can bring a very different perspective to it because I've seen 7 different industries.
Maybe 8. Could be 9. Maybe while people are listening to this, 10. But no, oh, I'm kidding. Lucia, thank you so much. Please let listeners know where they can follow up and support your many efforts.
Yeah, so you can follow Rock the Boat at Rock the Boat NYC on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter. You can listen to us on iTunes, Spotify, Google Play, wherever you get your podcasts. I think we're on 10 different platforms. Personally, you can email me at Lucia, it's L-U-C-I-A, at gorocktheboat.com.
Great. Thank you so much, Lucia.
Cool. Thank you so much for having me, David.
Yeah. Treat. Hey, friend. This episode with timestamp notes is available on my website at portfoliocareerpodcast.com. I'm really excited for you to learn from this episode and would love to hear any thoughts from you and continue the conversation where I post this episode on many different social channels. Please subscribe to wherever you listen to your podcast for my weekly Portfolio Career Podcast show, and really excited for you to build and grow your portfolio career. Thank you so much.